The weekly newsreel tonight is preempted by a special event that KDNK is simulcasting on the air and on our Facebook page. We are having a town hall with several elected officials from the state, county, and various municipalities in Garfield County and some local leaders. So I'd like to welcome everyone to this virtual town hall. And it's the first time I've hosted something on Facebook and on the air at the same time. So I'm hoping that things will be okay. Just want to let everybody know who's on the call. The event is split into three parts. First, I'll give a brief overview of some current local and regional stats. Then I'll introduce the panelists. After that, you guys can give some updates. Then part two is the Q&A. I have questions, some of which have been submitted by members of the public. The panel will also have an opportunity, once my questions are finished, to ask each other questions, and we'll also take questions from the public via Facebook. So all of you who are watching on Facebook, be thinking of what you'd like to hear from any of our panelists. Then part three will be sort of a needs assessment. So panelists, be thinking about what you need from each other going forward. So let's get started. Joining us today is State Representative for the 57th District, Perry Will, Garfield County Commissioner Tom Jankowski, Dan Richardson, Mayor of Carbondale, Jonathan Godis, Mayor of Glenwood Springs, and Mayor Barb Clifton of Rifle, Jackie Scramstad, Clinical Operations Manager for Mine Springs Health, Jasmine Ramirez, member of the Roaring Fork School Board, Katrina Byers, president of the nonprofit Citizens Advocacy Group Sustainable Planning and Design, and Aaron Anderson, president of the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild. That's quite a lineup. Thanks, everyone, for your expertise and your participation. And I'd like to just say at the beginning that this is not a political debate. I realize that emotions are running high these days, as are expectations. So I'd really like to encourage all of us to remain calm and respectful. With that, I'd like to share where we are locally and regionally with the coronavirus. And this is from various websites, including Garfield County's website, and the state of Colorado, and Eagle and Pitkin County websites. And these statistics were posted today, but they are good as of the end of the day yesterday, April 10th. So in the state of Colorado, there are currently 6,893 cases of coronavirus. 1,376 are hospitalized. The virus has shown up in 56 counties. 34,873 people have been tested. 274 deaths have occurred, and 67 outbreaks at residential and non-hospital healthcare facilities have occurred. I'm not sure if that includes the outbreak in Aurora. In Garfield County, 54 cases, 2 deaths out of a population of 59,806 people. Eagle County, 433 cases, 5 deaths, and the population is just over 52,000. In Pitkin County, 49 cases, 2 deaths in a population of a little over 17,000. According to Pitkin County's website, the Aspen Valley Hospital has 2 COVID-19 patients. 41 people have used the Aspen to Parachute hotline, and 302 people in Pitkin County have self-reported with symptoms of COVID-19. In Rio Blanco County, there's 1 case, no deaths, and 84 people have been tested. The Centers for Disease Control recommend face coverings. The city of Glenwood Springs requires face coverings, as does RAFTA, for all passengers starting Monday, April 13th. Okay, so panelists, it's finally your turn. And again, I want to welcome everybody to this call in this Facebook. It's not just a call, the Facebook event. And welcome everybody who's watching on Facebook and listening on air. So I would like to start off with State Representative Perry Will. Welcome, Representative Will. And can you give us some news from the State House?
So as most of you know, about March 5th is when the first COVID case was confirmed here in Colorado. And we were over at the legislature at the Capitol, and they sent us home that Saturday after we did some of our work on the 14th. and been asked to do all the social distancing, the shelter in place, trying to mitigate the effects of this pandemic and prevent further spread. So we've been doing that, and everyone at the Capitol. There was two presumed cases there in the Capitol, the state legislature, one in the Senate and one in the House. Turns out, I guess the one in the House never was confirmed that I actually was COVID. But so it did hit the legislature some. And that we've been following the statistics and the metrics of what's going on with this virus. The all the social distancing that's been going on has really been helping in flattening that curve. I know there was some of the models about this pandemic. I know they haven't quite met what they thought they would as far as hospitalizations. That percentage is way lower than what was anticipated. I do know, however, that like the ICU type, the number of people requiring that to do contract the virus is much higher than they anticipated. So obviously you've seen the governor on a lot of his updates and what they're doing around the state to prepare so we don't overwhelm our medical and hospital situations. So a lot of that, I think the preparation's been good. We've also in the legislature worked hard, you know, making sure everyone has the proper protection, the PPEs and stuff, and especially our frontline medical workers. And I definitely want to say, I mean, those people are true heroes, and I appreciate those people. They're basically ground zero going into those hospitals and dealing with these patients and transport, whether it's air transport or ambulance or whatever, and our first responders. So everyone there is doing a great job. I think we're getting better and better at this. I mean, a pandemic like this is, I don't know if you're ever prepared for it, but I think as the state's moving along, we are doing better and better job of it. I would like to say, you know, that social distancing and the shelter in place stuff has really helped. And I want to give a shout out to all of our communities. What a good job people have been doing to do that. And that really truly has slowed the spread and kept us from overwhelming our medical facilities.
Well, thank you, State Representative Perry Will of the 57th District. And if people have any questions for Representative Will, please hold them until the Q&A. And I would like to thank you, Representative Will, for joining us. Next up is Garfield County Commissioner Tom Jankowski. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully you can hear me all right through Zoom.
Yes.
And Garfield County, when the governor put together an emergency order, Garfield County did the same and put together an emergency health order for Garfield County. And in doing that, we set up a emergency management team, incident command team, that is headed by Wyvon Long, who is the director of our Department of Health in Garfield County. Also, Chris Bornholt, who is the emergency incident commander for Lou Valerio, the Sheriff's Department, is also is the lead on that. And there's an org chart from that that goes down and where the county commissioners fit in is where the policy part of that org chart. Other things in that org chart might be EMS, hospitals, foods, religious institutions, and so forth. I don't have it in front of me, but that's kind of what I remember. Also, when we saw the number of people, especially when the ski areas got shut down and pretty much tourism got shut down, we put in place a grant of $100,000 to Lift Up, which is our food bank for Garfield County, because we knew that was going to be, I mean, food and shelter are really the first two things we would want to talk about. We also did a grant for $40,000 to Meals on Wheels for those individuals that are in their homes, can't get out of their homes for different reasons. And so They were seeing about a 20% increase at Meals on Wheels, and we encouraged them to reach out to as many people as possible and provide food. Then our Director of Human Services, Sharon Longhurst Pitt, came in and asked for additional funding for financial assistance. We have a small fund for financial assistance in the Department of Human Services, but we took that up to $500,000, and that was put in place. The Board of County Commissioners meets three times a week with the Incident Command Team on the phone, and we get updates on what's going on and so forth. And I can talk about more, but what I'd like, I think with as big as this panel is, I probably should end there.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. And, you know, we're going to have some questions after everybody makes the presentation. So maybe we can get some details then. So thanks very much. Next up, Carbondale Mayor Dan Richardson. Thanks, Dan, for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Amy, and to KDNK. Carbondale is an amazing community. We've got expertise, compassion, and a strong will, and I think we've jumped on this. So I'm pretty proud of what we've been doing. We, as soon as things started coming to light, we also passed an emergency declaration. We immediately repurposed our recreation department into a help hotline, and the town just continued to support things. And then I got lots of calls from the community of, hey, what are we doing? How can I help? And a mutual aid Facebook page emerged. And then a citizen with just amazing expertise, PC Drew, came forward with a framework for a task force. And the task force was essentially born. The vision of our task force, and the task force is a partnership, a public-private partnership between the town and many partners. We've got 17 members, 50 partners, and over 27 initiatives going right now. We meet three times a week, and we obviously implement those. But our vision is to understand, support, and advocate for the needs of our community during a time of international crisis in order to ensure the safety, security, equity, and livelihood of all. So this task force really focuses on eight lines of effort. We have health, led by Rin Calhoun. We have economy, led by Andrea Stewart. We have strategic communications, led by Sarah Jane Johnson. Human capital, led by Amy Kimberly. Finance, directed by Renee Gustine. Technology, led by Justin Lewis. And advocacy, led by Erica Sparhawk. And lastly, crisis response, which is led by our police chief, Gene Schilling. Really what we've tried to do is understand what the issues are and help our community understand, and then obviously provide support. To better understand the issues, we have the hotline so where people can call in. You can go to our website, which is coloradogov.org, and fill out either a I need assistance form or I want a volunteer form, and that's how we're collecting information and people. We're setting up a dashboard so we understand all the different issues whether as they relate to the different lines of effort. We've set up a neighborhood heroes program where we've divided the town into 100 different sectors, and we try and find a hero for each of those sectors. We have at least 20 right now, and they're going out door to door, delivering our flyers, which are both in English and in Spanish, and seeing what the community needs. We've got Senior Matters and Carbondale Age Friendly Communities Initiative really going out and seeing what the needs of the seniors are and helping collect data. And then we've also been in good communication with Valley View Hospital and Roaring Fork Family Practice to understand what their needs are so that we can help advocate for that. And then with respect to support, as I mentioned, the Neighborhood Heroes is a big effort where we go out to the communities. We've got lots of volunteers who are doing that. We have runners, we have care callers, and we have a toolkit so that people who are runners and care callers can do that safely and they're wearing the proper PPE and are trained. I mentioned the resource flyers that are both in English and in Spanish. We have a group making masks and bouffants for the medical industry or the medical professionals, but they're hand sewing masks to pretty high standards. We've got Valley Meals and More, led by Mary Kenyon, who we've partnered with, who's delivering meals around town, as well as providing other care calls. Of course, we have our Chamber of Commerce, and Andrea Stewart has just been amazing with listing all the various business resources that we have available. The town also repurposed our revolving loan fund we've dropped it down to 0% interest and obviously repurposed it for recovery. We've partnered with the Aspen Community Foundation so that we can accept donations specific to Carbondale. Those donations will be funneled to nonprofits. And we've also partnered with the Manaus Fund, who also is a conduit for donations for individuals as opposed to nonprofits. They're doing amazing work. We're coordinating with Lift Up and Aaron with the Permaculture Institute to really look into food security and how we can backstop Lift Up in that respect in a more local way. We've developed a cybersecurity guidance form so that everyone who's now online more can better understand what the threats of cybersecurity is. We're partnering with some physicians to help get the word out about advanced directives. And there's a couple other initiatives that I'll leave off for right now. But I just want to say thank you to our whole community. We've been doing amazing work, and we are Carbondale strong. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. That's incredible what Carbondale has been able to put together. Can you give the city website again?
Yes, ma'am. CarbondaleGov.org. And that's you'll find our task force website on there.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Next up is Jonathan Godis, Mayor of Glenwood Springs. Mr. Mayor, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks very much for having me. Thanks, everybody, for putting this forum on. This is a great opportunity for us all to get there. Well, I think the big thing that everybody's been seeing is, I'll just jump right to it, is our face coverings that we have required in Glenwood Springs. And this is not face mask. We don't want to have people taking any PPE from the medical professionals or the first responders that might be using it. You know, and this is something that I think our council's really struggled with, trying to find the right balance between, you know, pushing our foot on the gas and ensuring that we're being really proactive, but at the same time, not going too far. Some might debate whether the face coverings is too far or not, but we have seen people go from 10, 20% of the people, at least anecdotally, at City Market and other stores who have done it as a good neighbor, as our federal government and as our state government have recommended. Now we're seeing a much, much greater adoption. So we're happy with how that's gone. But we're also have rejected a number of other proposals to everything from interior construction bans to carpooling limits to spacing requirement. I'm sorry, customer limits at some of the essential businesses like Lowe's and City Market and places like that. You know, it's a struggle. It really is a struggle trying to get that balance correct. We've also stopped our grants program. We have the $200,000 we typically give out as a municipality to our local nonprofits. We put a stop to that and we reopened that and asked for the nonprofit community to come back to us with grant ideas specific to this COVID-19 process. It's pretty tough to give grants in a business as usual manner when it's everything but business as usual right now. We've also been really doing a very intentional job. We started this several months ago before the COVID crisis of engaging the community. We've had interactive town halls. We've had Carfield Council when we used to be able to have coffee together. But we've also done twice a week virtual town halls, and these are typically on Wednesdays and Fridays. We've had guests from Valley View Hospital, Public Health, Lift Up, a PPE expert, personal protective equipment expert, to talk to businesses on how to set up their waiting rooms. What does this mean with a face covering order, public health order means? And yesterday we had the director of the Denver Federal Reserve talk about what the Federal Reserve is doing on a national and a local level for citizens. We're trying to at least once a week have Spanish translation or a Spanish language specific broadcast. Those are getting by far probably 4 or 5 times the amount of views that the English language is. So we're really happy and proud of that. And like I said, this has been a very intentional effort that's been going on now for several months. And we're also seeing quite a bit, and maybe it's just because it's easier to log on to a computer than it is to show up in person, but the participation we've had at our city council meetings has been really robust. So we're really happy with that. Unfortunately, the Chamber of Commerce, who puts on Strawberry Days, just announced last night, I got an email that they are canceling Strawberry Days. Postponing Strawberry Days until 2021, which essentially means it's canceled for this year. We're really disappointed in that, but we understand. We're also having, as a council, weekly meetings for the foreseeable future, as everything is just changing so quickly that, you know, 2 or 3 days goes by and there's new information out. COVID, non-COVID related items really quickly. We have a ballot question. We're trying to ask our citizens if they would like us to dispose of 19 acres, which is the old MOC Municipal Operations Centers. We have a letter of intent with RAFTA for them to purchase that land and dispose of the building, which has been deemed unsafe by a third-party engineer. Ballots are due April 14th. It's probably too late to mail it in at this point. If you still need to get it in, please drop it by the mailbox in front of the county building. And then the last thing that we're going to be considering, not the last thing, but the last thing I want to say is we're considering this week for City Council expanding and authorizing citywide broadband. I think we've all seen how important and necessary broadband is, and I think we as a council are treating broadband as an essential utility, just the same as water, electricity, sewage. So we just don't feel comfortable having one single provider and being reliant on that. So I think we're going to be directing staff to authorize a community-wide build out over the next 2 or 3 years. That's all I have. My time went a minute over. I apologize. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Godis. I do have one question ahead of the Q&A. You're talking about those virtual meetings Wednesday and Friday. Are they available for viewing on demand somewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do a Facebook Live, and we actually take real-time questions from anybody who wants to see it. So we will get, as presenters, I'll have a guest, and as we get questions in, we'll answer and have a back-and-forth conversation.
But I guess what I mean is, you know, for example, I didn't catch the last one with the Federal Reserve guy, and I'd really like to see it. Is that possible?
It is, yes. If you go onto the city's Facebook page, if you just type into the search bar, City of Glenwood Springs Government, that'll pop up, and just, I think it's probably one of the last things they've had. So go down there, and that video will be posted.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much for that information. Next up is Madam Mayor Barb Clifton of Rifle. Thank you very much for being on the call, Mayor Clifton.
Thank you. And thank you for hosting this. So the City of Rifle right now is really focusing on communication. That is, I think, the big issue for us. We have an extensive list of resources on our website. So we have impacts to the city and city activities, city services. We have local food resources. We have business resources and a referral to some credible sources, because we do want to make sure that the information that's out there is correct. The one of the things that we have started doing, in fact, that just happened this week, is we had our city manager and also one of our police sergeants, who is fluent in Spanish, do a video. We will be updating videos every week. And one of the things, again, that I think we're talking about in that video is dispelling some of the rumors that are out there. For example, police stopping individuals, questioning them about where they're going and what they're doing. So we want to make sure people understand we're not doing that, that they are free to travel as they're allowed under the order, that no one is going to be questioning them. In terms of some of the other things that we're doing, our Rifle Senior Center is providing meals now for 4 different locations. So it's Silt, Newcastle, Parachute, and Rifle. And that is sort of a take and go, obviously. You need to make reservations, but they are doing that in conjunction with the county. The Senior Center is also coordinating resources for individuals who may need help with shopping or assistance with some errands. They are coordinating that as well. And I'm happy to say that I spoke with our Senior Center coordinator a few days ago, and she said they had way more volunteers than they actually had people requesting assistance. So that's always good to know. We are also working on a lot of business resources. We have the Rifle Regional Economic Development Corporation, which is centered in Rifle but is regional. And they are working on a lot of information related to the SBA loans, some loans that the city has. The REDC also has some loans. Katie Mackley, who is the executive director, that has all of that information, and that information's on our website. And then finally, one of the things we all also are working on is sort of a back to work action plan. So once the restrictions are lifted, obviously they're not going to be lifted in full. And what is that going to look like? What are some resources we can provide? In fact, at our next council meeting, we are looking at doing some trail building and some other things like that that can be done with appropriate social distancing, but still get people back to work, particularly for those who are in industries that are going to take longer to come back. So I guess that's my update.
A lot. Great. It's exciting you. To hear that there are more volunteers than needs at the moment. In Rifle. Thank you very much, Mayor Clifton. Jackie Scramstad is with us. She is the Clinical Operations Manager for Mind Springs Health. Jackie?
Hi, welcome. Thank you, Amy. Thanks for having me. Mind Springs Health, we serve 10 counties, and obviously Pitkin County and Garfield County are two of our counties that we serve. Summit County is one of our counties, and that was where the very first patient was diagnosed with the coronavirus. So we moved into incident command mode pretty early on in this process. I think what's important for folks to know in terms of what we've been up to is we've really made sure that access to West Springs Hospital for people in acute psychiatric crisis remains available for anybody who needs that in our catchment area, and our hospital catchment area is even larger than our outpatient. So that remains open. Our mobile crisis services remain in place. Our detoxes in Grand Junction and Summit County remain open, and our residential treatment facility, Women's Recovery Center in Grand Junction, remains open. Those are all the programs, because people are physically there, that we have prioritized the PPE, our personal protective equipment that we have, to be able to maintain service in all of those high-end programs. What we've done in all of our outpatient offices, 10 countywide, is we have largely gone virtual. So we are still providing psychiatry, group therapy, individual therapy, family therapy, case management, all the services we normally provide via phone or via televideo services, just like Zoom. And we've had a lot of really good success, and people, I think, have appreciated not having to leave their home and still be able to get the help and support that they need. I think maybe people might not want to come back to the office after this crisis is over, because it's been very convenient for many. The other thing, though, that we've really done is a community mental health center. You know, we serve, we certainly serve individual and family clients, but the community is also our client. And so we really wanted to think about how do we provide some mental health supports for people who maybe don't feel like they need to come in and do therapy or have that level of service, but really all of us, if we're being honest, have some level of anxiety right now around what's happening. And so how do we provide some supports for our larger community? And so what Mind Springs Health has done is we have on our Mind Springs Health West Springs Hospital website, we have the COVID-19 support section, which has some little tips around coping with this current situation. It also has access, free access, I want to say, in Spanish and English, to a website called My Strength. And what My Strength really does is it provides in-depth mindfulness practice, meditation, affirmations. There's some cognitive behavioral strategies on just how to help deal with your anxiety or depression and not let your mind kind of run away with it, with your worries. So a lot of different so there's sleep support. So there's a lot of different supports people can access, again, from their computer or smartphone. It's free. It's in English and Spanish. We've also done a series. We're partway through our series of Facebook Live events. And much like the city of Glenwood, we do a Facebook Live event, and then it lives in video on our Facebook page where people can go back and access it. So, for example, one of mine was April 6th. I did a mindfulness. Well, if you really wanted to see that, you could go, oh, that sounds really interesting, and go to our Facebook page, look on April 6th, and there I would be talking about mindfulness. The other thing that we've recently done is put into place a COVID-19 support line. And this is not a medical support line. This is really, gosh, I'm having anxiety. I'm really stressed out about this situation. I'm struggling to handle not working, whatever that is. We put into place the support line so that folks can call and just have somebody to talk to. They don't have to be a client. It's just somebody to talk to. And then if they need further services or assistance, that person can direct them to the best place. So those are some of the things that we've been up to.
Well, you guys have been busy.
We have.
Yeah, that's great. It sounds like it's covering all bases. And I have some questions for you for later on in the town hall. Can you give your website, your email address? No, the URL, the website address, please.
Oh, it is mindspringshealth.org is our website.
Great. Well, thanks very much. Really appreciate your taking the time to be with us this evening. Jasmine Ramirez, you are a board member for the Roaring Fork School District. Really glad that you could make it this evening. Can you tell us a little bit about how these school closures have been going and what we need to know about the school district?
Yeah, thank you so much, Amy, for having me. I really just wanted to be part of this panel to give our district families some information, some very important information regarding what the district is doing to help our families right now. The Family Resource Center, which every county, every school district actually has something very similar, is still available to our families. And they are helping our families basically get connected to resources throughout the valley. So if we have a family that maybe needs to be connected to a leak or any type of assistance that has to do with bills or expenses that need to be paid, a Family Resource Center is there to assist. And you could reach them at 970-384-9500, or you could go ahead and send them an email at familyservices@rfschools.com. The Family Resource Center is open from 8 to 4. You can give them a call. They have bilingual family liaisons, so they're available for our Spanish-speaking families as well. And then we also have the School-Based Health Center, who is basically helping our families that are in need of any medical or COVID-related health concerns and mental health concerns. So we do want to provide that information to our families as well. And that phone number is 970-384-6054. We really want to encourage families, Spanish-speaking families as well, to call either of these phone numbers. And we do have staff that can give them a call back in their native language. And then we're providing free meals for all children under the age of 18. They don't have to be a student that attends our district. And we just want to encourage all families, if you guys are in need of nutritious food, or you guys just want to walk to the bus stop and grab a meal to get some fresh air, though, that food is available for all the kids within the district from Glenwood to Basalt. And we really want to encourage you guys to go grab some nutritious meals. And if you can't make it to that location that is set up already through the district, please let the Family Resource Center liaison know, because we are trying to accommodate those families that maybe can't get to those locations. Thank you.
Thank you. very much, Jasmine. This is great to know. And I'll probably have a few questions for you again, but I'd like to repeat those phone numbers. Excuse me, the Family Resource Center is 384-9500, open 8 to 4. And the School-Based Health Center is at 384-6054, and these services are bilingual. Is that correct?
Yes, and I definitely want to encourage families Monday to Friday, all children under the age of 18. Your kids don't have to be with you when you pick up the food. So I really encourage our families to try to make it to those locations, or please let us know if we can help you make sure your children receive that food.
Where are the locations?
Well, there's various locations, but there's three pickup locations in every city. So I believe Basalt Elementary School, Carbondale Elementary, and Glenwood Springs Elementary are the three pickup locations for every city. But you can definitely go on our school district website, and there is a link that provides you with the different locations in each city where you could meet the bus that is dropping off food. And again, if you can't make it to any of those locations, please give us a call so that we can try to accommodate.
Great. Thanks very much. Great to have you on the call.
Thank you.
Katrina Byers, president of Sustainable Planning and Design, which is a nonprofit citizens advocacy group. Can't read my own writing. Welcome. And thanks for helping set this up.
Thank you so much, Katie and Kay and Amy and everyone on this call for your time and all of your effort. And I just want to commend everyone for working so hard and encourage members of the community to reach out to these amazing resources. Go to your town website, go to the county website. These people are here looking out for all of us. And I really commend everyone and thank everyone for the work they're doing and sharing this important information. I would maybe circle back, and maybe you have this in your questions, Amy, but to have, if Jackie could read the phone numbers that she mentioned. So I'd love to get that out there. My little piece I'd love to bring to this is anyone listening on the radio or watching, if you have any PPE, if you work in a salon or you're a dental hygienist or you know, you're a tattoo artist, you might have gloves or masks. Both Valley View and Grand River Medical are accepting donations of PPE. I'm pretty sure at Valley View you can donate it at the valet. And if you have a donation you can make to Grand River Medical, you want to go around back to their south entrance. And the screeners will accept the donations. And we have a lot of that stuff. You know, I saw a restaurant that donated a whole giant box of those disposable gloves. And we just want to make sure that our frontline staff are more than covered and don't want for any equipment. So I've liked being a part of that. And then I just wanted to say that on the thread of this conversation, we'll put some of these resources, and I want to make sure we put up the Lift Up one. Lift Up is doing donations a couple times a week in most of the towns. There might be one that's only once a week, but get on there. And, you know, we've never experienced layoffs like this in this valley ever. And it's a remarkable challenge for everyone. And I think that it's really moving, and I've been really moved by the way people are looking out for each other and stepping up for each other. And in particular, the food resources that have been coming forward, I really commend that infusion into Lift Up, and they are helping so many families right now. So thanks so much for doing that, Tom. And I just really appreciate the solidarity of everyone working together. This is a public health crisis, and we're making it through that together. And one of the aspects of that is food, local food distribution. We've got some really great partners with that. We have Gwen Garcelon with the Roaring Fork Food Alliance, and Aaron's going to say a few words about the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild, but basically the goal is to really both support our local farms and ranches and food producers, and at the same time be producing the food that we need regionally. And we are so blessed to have hundreds of local farms and ranches, and so we just want to kind of close the gap between food collection and distribution, and make sure people know where they can go to get those resources. So I'm going to hand it off to Aaron, and thank you everyone for being a part of this. I think this is a real comfort to the community to just have all this information all out at once. So thank you, everyone.
Really appreciate your presence during this event. And before we get to Aaron Anderson, I'd like to remind people that on the air, you're listening to KDNK, and it's about 6:42, and you're listening to and watching on Facebook a special COVID-19 town hall featuring State Representative Perry Will, Garfield County Commissioner Tom Jankowski, Mayors Dan Richardson from Carbondale, Jonathan Godis from Glenwood Springs, Madam Mayor Barb Clifton from Rifle, Jackie Scramstad, Clinical Operations Manager for MindSprings Health, Jasmine Ramirez from the Roaring Fork School District Board, and Katrina Byers, and now Aaron Anderson, who is the president of the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild. Thank you very much, Aaron, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Erin. I'm a community organizer and one of the leaders of the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild. I also help take care of our food forest here in Carbondale. On April 7th, the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild held our bi-monthly meeting. We had asked Gwen Garcelon, a wonderful colleague and ally from the Roaring Fork Food Alliance, to help us facilitate this larger discussion about what does COVID response look like from a food security and justice kind of perspective. The Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild is made up of all sorts of backgrounds, from policy to IT and farming and social justice and health, and we're all able to really coalesce and rally around ethical food security and social justice. We think that it's critical that we recognize that our poor and underserved populations just doubled, if not tripled, in size. Almost 30% of renters in the U.S. didn't pay rent this month after missing one paycheck. And what is that going to look like when we're missing three paychecks and more as we move through the month? Housing and food and money security has always kind of been an issue in the Roaring Fork Valley, but it's really amplified and in our faces more now. We're seeing nonprofits blow through their entire annual budgets in the first fiscal quarter. Lift Up has been running out of food with dozens of cars still wrapped around the block to receive food at some of their drives. There's a challenge for them to get access to and then store and then distribute fresh produce. And I think that we all kind of realized how fragile our system is this first couple of weeks. We were at the grocery stores and there's virtually no food. So like the same time we're seeing all of that, we're seeing farmers who are struggling and want to expand, but they can't because of irrigation needs or access to seeds or needing more land or water or labor or whatever. So the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild kind of landed on three calls that we're coalescing around. And we're looking at a macro level discussion of what does food security and resiliency look like for the Roaring Fork Valley. We need to support our farmers now. Like, what does this look like? Maybe that's buying bulk CSA shares up front and donating them in to Lift Up over the long term. And we're coming up with creative solutions between these organizations and the farmers. So like, we have a call out to farmers. If you're open to collaboration, please reach out to us. There are people actively working on your behalf to find solutions. And the third kind of movement is this huge community effort to bring back this sort of like victory style kitchen gardening model to increase the amount of food that we can produce and donate. Right now, we're partnering with local schools, master gardening programs, farmers to donate seed and plants, homeowners who have access to land in the community who's willing to go and put this effort forward. So like, if you're a homeowner that's open to this, reach out to us. If you have a desire to produce food, reach out to us. We want to help connect with people. In response to Dandelion Days being postponed, Mauna in Carbondale is going to be doing socially distanced plant sales with just one farmer selling seeds and starts at a time. I'm sure our local farmers would be open to doing this in other communities if there were essential businesses that were open to hosting a similar sort of arrangement. But there's lots of stuff going on and lots of ways to plug in. Please connect with myself or Gwen Garsloan on Facebook or the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild Facebook group or the Roaring Fork Food Alliance Facebook page.
Wonderful. I love that. Food activism. I really do. It's so exciting to me. And so once again, the Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild Facebook page. And then Gwen Garcelon, what is her Facebook page?
She runs the Roaring Fork Food Alliance Facebook
page. Roaring Fork Food Alliance, that's right. And then in order to find out more, is all of this on your Facebook page? Like, you know, how to connect with Mana Foods and Carbondale and the plant sales. Is that all on your Facebook page? Yeah.
The Roaring Fork Permaculture Guild is a Facebook group, and there is a great download of information there. And I feel like there's more and more information coming out daily.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much, Erin. Really great to have you doing that work and being with us this evening. Okay. We're moving into part two. It's about 6:48 right now. And I really thank you all very much for these exciting updates. You know, I have some questions and then that are my own and also have been submitted by the public ahead of time. And so I have some questions and then the panel, you guys will have an opportunity to ask each other questions. And then we'll open it up to the public. And for the sake of time, if your question gets asked by someone else, please don't ask it again unless you need some clarification. Thanks very much. And again, I'm not taking calls at the station. You can submit questions via Facebook. And thanks, Lucas, for handling all of this stuff. Well, I'm going to start off, first of all, since this question is right, I'm kind of going off script here, but you know, because Erin was talking about food and food security, first of all, Erin, where is Lift Up running out of food?
I heard the reports from the Carbondale location. I've not been at all of them. I know they're doing two pickups a week in every town. And Angela has been doing an incredible job. And since we've been highlighting this, there have been huge donations coming in. And this is an ongoing issue. And even when people go back to work, this isn't going to go away overnight. And we need to stay proactive in taking care of our vulnerable folks.
And I'd like to throw this question out to all panelists. How secure do the municipalities feel in terms of food? Let me ask that again. I can't read my handwriting. I'm sorry. How secure do municipalities feel in terms of food supply and medical supplies right now during the pandemic? Just open it up.
That's a loaded question, Amy, but I would say in Carbondale, I think City Market and the other stores are doing a really good job keeping things resupplied. And we do have a pretty strong local food network. But I think as Erin talked about, the fact that Lift Up is running, I've noticed that they run out on Thursdays, not so much on Mondays, indicates, and the fact that really we're just in the early phases of this in terms of economic impact. I'm concerned, but I think our community is so strong. I'm not worried.
It's good to hear. Jonathan, Mayor or Barb in Rifle?
Yeah, I'll jump in. We actually, I think two meetings ago, had a conversation about community gardens in Glenwood Springs, additional community gardens, even small scale. I don't know if industrial is the right word, but scale, like food production type gardens, so more food production than gardens. We currently have two community gardens already, so we're definitely going to look at that. The direction was to give staff an opportunity to apply for some grants because we're also balancing every single dollar that goes out of the city right now. I think as this goes on, we'll be making more of those decisions. And but like Dan, I think after the first initial wave for the first couple of weeks, we're starting to see our city market in Glenwood Springs have more and more. I mean, there's toilet paper last time I went. So, you know, I don't know what that says. But, you know, the federal government and the state government have said there are no food shortages. People are still producing food. Farmers are still producing food. The food distribution network is not compromised yet. And so I think, like Dan, it is a concern. But until we start to hear some more definitive supply chain interruptions, I'm not going to panic yet.
Here, we don't want mayors panicking. Madam Mayor, Barb Clifton, Rifle.
Yes, so I would agree. City Market and Walmart, which are the two grocery stores in Rifle, are actually doing pretty well. They are quite well restocked. We are seeing as well here, the lines for Lift Up are incredible. We have two pickups, which is Wednesday and Friday. I will say that I actually went and volunteered at Lift Up, which is headquartered here in Rifle at the Garfield County Fairgrounds. The counties allow them to use the fairgrounds because it's easier for the trucks, the supply trucks, to get in and out to deliver the goods. I am so impressed with what they've been able to do. The amount of money that counties donated has helped them substantially in terms of getting more food available. The one thing I actually would suggest that people do, if they're interested, is they do continue to need help bagging the food. All the food obviously comes in big bulks, and then they put it, break it down and put it into smaller bags to give to each of the individuals. And Dana Wood, who is with Garfield County, is actually coordinating the volunteer list. And I would encourage people to do that because that is, it is a lot of work and it is a lot of bags of food. And so I would give them all the support you can.
With Garfield County. Is that what you're saying? Dana Wood with Garfield County?
Yes, Dana Wood, Garfield County.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She's coordinating the volunteers.
Okay. You know, I really am going off script. This is terrible. But I have a question from the public. Lucas, that font is really small and I have to sort of lean in and might screw up all of the cables and things. Can you read that question? Lucas? Thanks.
Yeah, so this one from Will Hodges or the other one?
The one, we'll go with Will's first and then get to Gavin's in a minute.
Okay. So this question is for Perry Will and Tom Jankowski. It says, undocumented immigrants provide the basis of our economy. Constructions, kitchens, housekeeping, food service, they're either the first to be laid off or they're forced to keep working as essential workers, but without hazard pay or paid sick leave. They also don't qualify for federal benefits like unemployment insurance. What is GARCO doing to make sure that they are not evicted from their homes and can receive economic assistance? At the state level, I guess, but we could start with Commissioner Jankowski, if that works.
Yeah, I'm happy to answer that one. And first of all, I kind of need to go through the safety net that we have. And for financial assistance, people need to call into Garfield County to the Human Services Department, 945-9191 or 625-5282. And those numbers are on our website, which is garfield-county.com. We have eligibility technicians we have 8 to 10 eligibility technicians that are on the lines Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And when they talk to somebody about financial assistance, they'll also talk about our other safety net programs, which are supplemental nutritional assistance program, formerly known as food stamps, Medicaid, so if somebody's lost their insurance, talk to them about health insurance. TANF, the LEAP program. LEAP program is for utility assistance. And our eligibility is set by the state and the federal government. And so we have no options on that. When we look at eligibility,
for financial assistance and so forth, we'll look at, are you Garfield County residents, you know, and they'll talk to you individuals about their income and so forth, lack of income now. But in dealing with undocumented immigrants, if there's one individual in the family that is a U.S. citizen, then that will usually help for that entire household. So that's one way to do it. Otherwise, they will refer undocumented immigrants to our nonprofits, such as Catholic Charities, Valley Settlement, Salvation Army, the River Center, and some of those charities that are not charities, but nonprofits that are working on the front lines and providing additional assistance. So it's more or less my answer.
I don't know if Perry Will would like to jump on that question at all.
Okay, yeah, just shortly. I mean, you know, from the CARES Act, Bill, there's a lot of things that are helping all these people out. I mean, the undocumented worker thing is a tough one, but the nonprofits really, and like Tom mentioned, the Salvation Army. I mean, there's lots of landlords and different people working with the renters and all that. Everyone understands they're joining together and helping each other out. I don't care if it's, you know, from the food aspect to the rent aspect, everyone's trying to get through this together. And people are very good about donating to these nonprofits and helping out in that situation. And that's where I see the some of those programs that Tom mentioned as well, with Salvation Army and those. That's probably the best bet through the county and even the churches as well.
Well, I've been hearing from the public that they haven't heard from the commission in terms of an official statement or town hall meeting. What would you say to those people? I mean, does the Board of Commissioners plan to have a town hall or a community meeting for updates other than the weekly Monday meetings?
No, we are not planning to have a town hall. You know, we have our Monday meetings, and that is the best way to talk to us or to call us directly, email us directly. And that is the best way to get a hold of us. But there is besides our agenda at 8 a.m., you can get on as public comments, and we would encourage those. So can you hear me all right, Amy? Okay, good. And so we would encourage those, but no, we don't have any town halls set up at this time.
Bi-weekly meetings with, or the twice a week meetings with the incident command team.
The incident command team meetings are meetings that where we talk directly through the emergency powers, more or less. They're not open to the public, let me put it that way.
All right. Because I think the three times a month regular county commission meetings are not strictly COVID oriented. And I guess I'm wondering if the county commissioners would be open to having an occasional town hall or community meeting for people to ask questions directly to the commission related to COVID-19. Your thoughts about that?
Oh, I don't have a problem with that at all concerning COVID-19. I would be welcome to that. I welcome, you know, I have probably answered 100 emails, different emails back and forth about the county's response and so forth. So I don't have an issue talking about COVID-19 and what we're doing and how we can help. You know, as far as Lift Up, we have sent a message to Lift Up that if they need additional funding for food security, that funding is there. So to let us know when they, and so hopefully when they're running out of food, it's a matter of they just don't have, it's not a financial matter. It's a matter of they don't have enough at that particular location.
And another question, the Board of County Commissioners, according to Monday's agenda, will discuss the Glenwood Springs facial covering order. Does this mean that the county will follow the Glenwood Springs direction about requiring facial coverings. What is the county's stance on that?
Thank you. That's a good question. The county stance is that we are following the governor's orders, and we're not doing anything more restrictive than the governor's orders. And so we will continue with the face coverings. They are voluntary, not mandatory. And when you get into this county, which goes from Carbondale to the Utah border, I'm happy with the number. I mean, I'm not happy, but I'm happy that we only had 11 more cases this week, because we thought our cases would be doubling. So the social distancing, the stay-at-home order, that seems to be working. And the majority of the cases are still in the Roaring Fork Valley. And so so at this time, no, we're not going to have a mandatory face covering order.
To be discussing Glenwood Springs mandatory face cover order Monday. Can you talk a little bit about why you plan on doing that?
I don't think there's going to be much discussion on it.
Okay. So are you going to make a resolution or anything according to that, or are you just going to look at it?
No, like I said, we are following the governor's orders. If the governor comes out with a mandatory face coverings, then we will then follow suit.
Okay. And I don't mean to be picking on you, just most of the questions that I've received are, sort of addressed to the county commission. And I think a lot of that is because people want to hear from county leadership. And I've had some comments about how constituents are curious about why the county commission hasn't made a public statement, from the county commission. And do you think it's important for people to hear from county leadership during things like this? I know this is probably unprecedented, but I think the public wants to hear more from the commission itself. Your thoughts?
Well, when the county puts out an emergency health order about COVID-19, I think that is a very strong message from the Board of County Commissioners, and also from the Board of Health. The County Commissioners also are the Board of Health in Garfield County. So, but in this case, and I have to just thank Yvonne Long for the leadership that she has presented through. She is the director of our health department, and have to thank her for her leadership and the entire health department for what they've been able to do in the county.
Koski, with you, you mentioned this great $500,000 financial assistance grant, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, that you guys gave to the Department of Health and Human Services, the County Health and Human Services. Can you be specific about what kind of financial assistance that will go to?
Yes, that is for families that have income of $75,000 or less. It is for rent assistance up to $1,500. It's for food assistance up to $500. It's for transportation assistance, and then some other individual assistance, but $3,000 per family maximum. And again, you would talk to our eligibility technicians on that. You would need to be a Garfield County resident. You would need to supply a W-9. So there are the eligibility requirements that you would have in any of these other programs that we provide, which are part of the safety net that we provide.
And what plans does Garfield County have for sort of getting the economy back on its feet going forward?
Yeah, and that's probably one of my biggest concerns at me personally as a county commissioner. How do we how do we look forward 2 to 3 months from now? Because right now, a lot of our businesses are getting the SBA payroll protection grants, or they are applying.
Small Business Association.
They haven't come in yet, but I've been told that in Western Colorado, there's $180 million out there in grants. And so hopefully that will help the companies for their first couple of months. But we need to get this, we need to get our economy back going again. So, you know, and some of that, and you got to look at the different sectors of our economy. But, you know, the tourism sector comes to mind, first of all, and that's primarily Glenwood and Carbondale. But once we get that back once we get the go ahead where we don't have the stay at home orders. And I think it's going to be we're going to come out of that gradually, just like we went into it gradually. Maybe, you know, meetings not over 50 people and social distancing and so forth. But we need to be able to get that message back out to the Front Range that we're open for business in the Roaring Fork Valley, because there's going to be a pent-up demand for people to be able to leave their homes, and they're not going to want to do it on airplanes. So a weekend vacation in the Roaring Fork Valley is it, but we need to be ready for that. I think with our restaurants, that's going to come a little bit slower, but we're trying to set up meetings right now with our restaurants to talk to our food, and you know, the county now does the food inspection. So how are we going to move forward in our restaurants? Are they going to come back to half capacity? How are they going to have the social distancing, and how is that going to work? We have looked in our procurement department, and we have some capital projects, about $8 million worth of capital projects. So we're trying to push those forward. So as soon as we're back to normal or closer to normal, I don't know if we'll ever be to normal, that those projects can be let and people and they can start working immediately. In Garfield County, with the governor's order, construction is considered still an essential service, and we're allowing construction in Garfield County with a limit of 10 employees and social distancing. So we do have some construction going on in Garfield County. It's going to be extremely important that Pitkin County lifts their ban as soon as they possibly can, so we can get the trades going again. So I think in our retail sector, if we can get the tourism going again, then that's going to help the retail sector. So those are some of the things we're looking at right now. But I'm really impressed with what Dan has done in Carbondale and also Jonathan and Barb, because they're all looking as well. Each of these municipalities looking at how do we get this economy going again? Because that's extremely important to get people back to work. You know, we have COVID-19 is going to affect, you know, it's going to affect 2% of our population. We got to get this other 98% back working as soon as we possibly can.